You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m, our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews and culture pieces from across Aotearoa Dunedin.
Good afternoon. That's right, you're tuned into the R1 News at 1, and we are back for the very final half semester of the year. Today's hosts are myself, I'm Jemima Lorimer.
And I'm Isla Toring.
And we've got a pretty stacked show for you today. We have an interview with Associate Professor Philip Wilcox from Otago Whakaihu Waka. He is a quantitative geneticist and bioethicist, and he'll be talking to us about legislative genetic engineering changes that are coming and how these go together with a te ao Māori worldview, or how they may not go together. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. You've got a lot of really thoughtful questions put together, Isla, so make sure you stay tuned for that. We've also got Sports Sweep with Sam Somerville. He'll be filling us in on Paralympic sport news, rugby news, and some sailing news, and some more. We've also got STEM news for today as well. Do you want to tell us what you'll be talking about on that? Just a little teaser.
Yeah, sure thing. It's something to do with Doritos and invisibility, which is very neat to me.
It's so cool. I'm really looking forward to it. So, Stack Show, make sure you stay tuned. We'll be back with the bulletin. But first up, this is Coco Solid with Heaven's Gate.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Tuesday, the 10th of September. I'm Isla.
And I'm Jemima. In student news, the OUSA exec election is coming up and nominations are now open until this Thursday. If you are keen to be on the OUSA exec for 2025, then get two mates together to nominate you by heading to the OUSA main office reception together to fill out the required paperwork. The nominations period runs from Monday 9th of September to this Thursday 12th of September, closing at 4:30 p.m. There are 12 roles available, including OUSA President, Vice President, and many, many more, with a varying number of hours per week. Once the nomination period closes, the candidates have until Monday 30th of September to campaign. Then voting will open. To find out more about the roles, their duties, the election process, and rules around campaigning, head to ousa.org.nz.
In national news, members of Aotearoa's Muslim Christchurch express concerns with current minister's proposal to change gun legislation. This year, there have been discussions within the current government about rewriting aspects of New Zealand's regulation around firearm control. Associate Justice Minister Nicole McKee, in February, confirmed that she believes that there is some merit in allowing possession of semi-automatic rifles. McKee herself is a former spokesperson for the Firearm Lobby Group Council for Licensed Firearm Owners. In 2019, the Arms Legislation Bill was introduced tighter controls on the use and possession of firearms, one of the methods being the creation of a registry that stored information regarding license holders, their weapons, and ammunition. The licensing system was also improved on. The Christchurch mosque attack on March 15, 2019 was a devastating event that took the lives of 50 people. The consequences of the shooting caused a reformation of New Zealand gun law. Al-Noor Mosque Imam Gamal Foda on Saturday to a crowd of 100 in Christchurch said that the ban of these weapons was a critical step after the attack. We must not go backwards. Allowing the general public to access these weapons again, even for recreational purposes, would put us all at risk. Another speaker at the event, chairperson of the Federation of the Islamic Associations of New Zealand, Abdur Razak, said that the council process for the changes are deceptive, undemocratic, and dangerous due to the lack of data and evidence in support of semi-automatic firearms. Philippa Yazbek, co-founder of Gun Control New Zealand and another speaker at the event, said that we cannot protect our people from a future mass shooting if we do not retain our ban on these weapons of war. David Buckingham, an employment relations consultant based in Queenstown, found that Inland Revenue is giving hundreds of thousands of taxpayers details to social media platforms for marketing campaigns. In a statement, Inland Revenue Minister Simon Watts claims that he had been advised that it did protect the identities of the people involved. In another statement, Inland Revenue states that anonymization was maintained through a hashing process that replaced letters with numbers. However, in July, the United States Federal Commission, in a press release, stated that hashing is not a sufficient enough protection. And in 2019, European regulators came to the same conclusion. In a statement to RNZ, Inland Revenue claims that each social media platform has its own privacy principles in place that it must adhere to. Buckingham, in regards to the actions of Inland Revenue, states that they have created a technical techno-gobbledygook smokescreen as a distraction from the fact that they've actually betrayed almost every New Zealander by disclosing. Software developer and cybersecurity consultant Jonathan Wright says that the most disturbing thing was that taxpayers were not given a choice on the distribution of data. Associate Professor of Commercial Law Gehin Gunasekera, in a response to hashing, emphasized that regulators all over the world have pointed to the weakness of that method.
In international news, the U.S. Department of Justice, along with eight U.S. states, have filed a case against Google for having an illegal monopoly on the grounds that it has too much power over the online ad market. In a statement to BBC, Google said that DOJ is doubling down on a flawed argument that would slow innovation, raise advertising fees, and make it harder for thousands of small businesses and publishers to grow, end quote. The trial over the alleged ad tech monopoly will take place this Monday US time in Alexandria, Virginia, in the form of a bench trial. The case will be decided by US District Judge Leonie Brinkemer. This case takes place a month after a different Google case in the District of Columbia, where it was declared that the search engine was a monopoly. However, there has not yet been any imposed remedies nor proposed sanctions from the government.
This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Tuesday, the 10th of September. Today's bulletin was written by Isla Taring and Jemima Lorimer and read to you by Isla Taring and Jemima Lorimer.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
Hey, this is R1 News. I'm Isla Taring and it is Tuesday. Keep listening because up next we have an interview with Associate Professor Philip Wilcox. We have Sam Somerville's sports sweep as well as my own STEM segment. But before that, we have Astro Children with Jamie Knows.
Wet in my head, no way to them until it's what you said.
R1 News at 1.
Welcome back to the R1 News at 1. You just heard Carb on Carb with Be My Mirror.
I'm Isla Taring, and today we have Associate Professor Philip Wilcox from the University of Otago for an interview. This is on genetic engineering within New Zealand. Philip Wilcox has worked on the interface of Maori bioethics and gene technologies, which situates him in the perfect position to discuss Maori perspectives on changes happening within New Zealand regarding genetic engineering. We are very grateful to have you on.
Tēnā kōrā. Kia ora, and thank you to the listeners for listening.
One of your projects this year was identifying Maori perspectives on gene editing in Aotearoa, New Zealand. The study found that, quote, participants emphasized that such approval should align with Maori values and prioritize community benefit over commercial interests, unquote. Would you be able to outline the Maori values that participants want included?
I think... just to boil that one up a bit, people want to see benefits maximised and costs or risks eliminated. And so the sorts of benefits are things like that people might want to see wellness, ho ora. They want to see being respected, being the application of the technology, uplifting themselves, uplifting their whānau, uplifting communities. So that's about mana. It's also about life force, enhancing life force. So that's about Māori. And then the ability to care better for the environment as well. So that's about tiakitanga, or the practice of kaitiakitanga, which is a kind of a modern Māori term, if you like, for for looking after the environment. So those are some of the core values that we would want to see. And enhancement of whakapapa, our genealogy. And whakapapa is not just genealogy, I should say, it's also the stories that go with the ancestors. And so that's about pūrākau, that's about actually creating a better space and a legacy for our descendants, our mokopuna, ngā uri whakatipu, those growing up today, and those yet to come, that we can leave behind a proud legacy. So that's about mana, that's about having benefits from these technologies, for not just for ourselves as individuals, well, our whānau, but for those to come as well.
Most definitely. And you're involved in a bunch of different places within the university. Would you like to outline any of those in particular?
So currently co-lead two projects. The first is referred to now as He Kākano. That's the name of the project. That means the seed, or it also means descent lines. And that project is about putting together sequencing genomes of approximately 1,000 Māori, and putting together a database consisting of differences in DNA sequence amongst all of those Māori, so in our sample. And in that project, we use mātauranga Māori. All participants are asked about their whakapapa, and because Māori have 35, 40 generations of knowledge of ancestors, as well as good records of what waka their ancestors came over on and things like that, as well as their tribal histories, their sub-tribe, et cetera, through these practices of pepeha, we are able to develop metrics that allow an assessment of the diversity in that data set, and do the participants that we've recruited reflect the diversity in Te Ao Māori, comparing it with things like the census, representation of the census in 2013, and possibly even the later census as well, if we can get the information. Mm. To ensure that the representation of our database reflects the variation out there in Te Ao Māori. So that's one. Also using or doing another project where we're actually simulating different methods for calculating disease risk using whakapapa information. So simulations essentially mean that we use statistical models to model demographic processes to create a contemporary Māori population in a computer, not real people, and they were able to calculate disease risks using different analytical methods based upon the population structures, and those population structures that we try to model, the population demography that we try and model, is based upon the existing knowledge of migration into Eastern Polynesia, and then from Eastern Polynesia to Aotearoa, and then things like admixture with people of European descent, British colonists who came over here, as well as some bottleneck events when our population went down very quickly. And those two of those events are the flu pandemic at the start of the 20th century, and the other one was the musket wars, which led to about the 1820s, early 1830s, that led to about a 30% reduction in Māori population. So we're modelling that. Statistically, we're modelling it, creating a population, and a virtual population, not an actual population. And then we're trying to figure out what different methodologies we can or might be best for calculating disease risk. And we're doing that on the basis that very soon this precision health thing is going to somehow come into force in this country. We're all probably going to have our genome sequenced, or some of us will have our genome sequenced, and our results indicate that with Māori knowledge of whakapapa. Not everyone needs to have their genome sequenced. Mm. And if it's $600 to sequence someone's genome and you're not sequencing 500,000 people, you're saving 500,000 times $600, right? So Māori knowledge has value, commercial value, financial value for our health system. So those are the sorts of things we're thinking about at the moment, and that's why we're doing some of the simulations to figure out, well, you know, how does Māori knowledge work in these kinds of contexts. So those are two of the projects I'm working on. And also a third project is trying to figure out, I'm also working, I've got a background in plant breeding as well, and trying to work out what some of the criteria are for Māori landowners when they're breeding manuka for honey production. So is it just honey that they're interested in, or there are other characteristics that the landowners want to see bred into their improved varieties of manuka, such as ability to hold land together better, to provide, to prevent erosion and things like that. So those sorts of things. So I'm trying to use this, well, all of my research is using the sort of modern tools of genetic science and genomic science, as well as Māori knowledge and Māori understandings of genealogy, as well as the environment, and goals to preserve and utilise those things appropriately. So, yeah, it's a great space to work in. It's a real privilege to be able to do that.
Definitely. All of that sounds incredibly fascinating, and it seems like a lot of areas of science, of course, requires different perspectives, voices to get like a holistic idea of what's happening and who it affects. And this ties in great with genetic engineering and some previous research that you've also done. Like in 2019, there was a paper called Indigenous Perspectives in Gene Editing in Aotearoa, New Zealand. In 2008, there was another paper called A Values-Based Process for Cross-Culture Dialogue Between Scientists and Māori. Would you like to outline that in relation to genetic engineering, or perhaps tie bits and pieces of it to how it connects in other aspects of science?
Sure. So sort of there's a little bit of a personal journey here. Yeah. In 2001, I'd been out of my PhD for a few years. I'm not going to admit how many years. and you know, my life at that stage, I'd married back into our iwi. I had family. The family I married into was a Manaia-based whānau. We, you know, my personal life was very much in Māori space. And then my work life was doing science, just doing molecular genetics. And I was working with it alongside a group of people doing genetic modification research. And it was at a time, and this is like back in the early 2000s, at a time when there were some very difficult conversations. People were talking past each other. And my colleagues came to me and said, well, you know, my genetic engineering colleagues came to me and said, well, we want to be able to talk better to Māori. And can you help us with that? And upshot of that was, in the classic Māori world, where nepotism is a virtue, I got my brother-in-law in, because we talked about it over, you know, and family functions and things like the whānau functions and things like that. And we started up a group called Te Aro Tūruki. We developed a framework, which was the 2008 publication. We've developed web resources. And I actually even teach that framework now. And we've utilised it. And it's really about how to have a values-based conversation in the context of gene technology research, where that values-based conversation is framed within tikanga. So tikanga are specific values that collectively, you know, like mana, tapu, mauri, whakapapa, kaitiakitanga, tamia, you know, it's all of that stuff put together and then unpacked in a way that researchers have to respond to specific questions around each of those values relating to their research proposals, their specific research proposal. And so we developed that framework, we developed a website, and we've put that framework into action. And as I said before, we teach teach that framework and even assess students, including non-Māori students, who actually are very good at this stuff. One of the pleasures I've had as a teacher here at this university is to be able to teach that stuff to non-Māori students, and actually they turn out to be very good for the most part. These things are not hard to understand. It's not like it's rocket science, and it's not like it's the statistics that I also teach either, which is probably a lot harder to understand. Mm-hmm. So that was the 2008 thing. Mm. And then in 2019, that was the first paper of a series of papers that were published on Māori perspectives around gene editing technology. So gene editing, is essentially very, very specific changes in a genome, as opposed to genetic modification, which was inserting whole genes. You can do that with gene editing, but with gene editing you can also do very, very specific changes in very small sequences of genomes, and you can change them from one variant that occurs in the same species to another variant that occurs in that same species. So, as well as putting in genes from other species and things like that. So we were looking at Māori perspectives around those technologies, and this year we published a meta-analysis of 8 different studies. But they showed that essentially, Māori are by and large open to these technologies as long as they are evaluated and controlled in a manner consistent with tikanga.
Mm. And in relation to tikanga, and before you also touch on Maturanga Māori, would you like to elaborate how those two influence each other and the genetic engineering space in New Zealand?
Sure. The way I sort of teach it is that Maturanga is essentially Maturanga Māori is not a system. That includes the information itself, and there's types of and the contextualization of that information. And as well as all the actors and the entities that are involved in the generation of information, the passing on of that information, the validation of that information. So as a knowledge base, Maturanga Māori is essentially wrapped within tikanga. So knowledge should be shared, but under certain circumstances, with restrictions on how it gets used and things like that. So in the genetic modification space, there's a lot of concern around violation of tapu, the alteration of whakapapa. And so the new legislation that's coming out is and there's even under the existing legislation, there was recently a ruling that said that an offspring of a genetically modified organism that doesn't inherit the genes that have been added in, the foreign genes, is itself not a genetically modified organism. But from a whakapapa perspective, yes it is, because whakapapa, if you alter whakapapa, you alter everything that goes on afterwards, or all of the subsequent lines, if you like. But it's a contextual thing. With that change in whakapapa, there's also a context around that. That is, typically it's done by powerful actors, it's paid for by government or by commercial agritech. It's undertaken by specialist groups in universities such as this, or at Crown Research Institutes, and it's expensive work. It's not something that you or I could do after dinner one night when we felt like it kind of deal. You need specialised equipment. You need highly specialised and trained staff and students, and there's a lot of them now in the genetics teaching program. And it also sits within the kind of contemporary neoliberal capitalist model that our society currently runs. So when something has its whakapapa altered, what goes with it is the pūrākau, that context, those stories, the powerful actors and everything like that. So from our perspective, or from my Māori perspective anyway, essentially the offspring of a gene-edited organism or a gene-modified organism, even if it doesn't contain that change, still comes with that whakapapa. And so the existing legislation, which is about to be overturned, I think was actually consistent with a Māori contextualisation of things. Now they're saying, well, you know, if it doesn't matter if it's not, if it doesn't, if it's, it's a science based, it's a science based definition. But that science based definition is not a, is not, in my view, nearly comprehensive enough, and therefore comes with issues that we need to address.
Definitely. And it seems like there's a lot of barriers currently happening and a lot of things that needs to be addressed. In terms of genetic engineering then, and the current legislative change happening, what would your proposition from your perspective and background be for an ideal evaluation process?
Well, I was actually asked that question by people who were drafting the legislation, and the answer was just tikanga. This is the stuff that we teach, right? This is the Arotūruki framework. There's other frameworks. Basically, what we know is that they're easy to implement. They work well because they're holistic models. They're holistic frameworks. They engage and they create relationships, or they ensure that relationships are created and that people really think hard about what they do before they go about doing it. And so that was my answer to that question was, well, tikanga. Here are our frameworks. Here's a list of frameworks. But it doesn't appear that that's what the government wants to hear. So, you know, and there's reasons for that, which have got nothing to do with evidence, in my view.
And is there any final notes you'd like to finish off with? Because that's all the questions I have for you today.
Well, I'll just pick up on what on this current government. You know, governments come and governments go, and this government will go, and the ideology that the minor parties, particularly the ACT Party and its leader David Seymour, are pushing, will go. What will be left behind are you guys, you know, the younger folk of this country, who will go on to be adults, go on to be decision makers, and go on to influence the direction of this country. Shameless plug for the courses that I teach, but I teach in bioethics, teach these tikanga frameworks in bioethics, genetics, statistics, and agriculture, and I think biochemistry at one point as well. They're easy to learn. They're for everybody to learn. They're for everybody to apply. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, in the future, many of us will have children, even if we're not Māori, or even if we are Māori. We're going to have Māori children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren. How do we want them to consider us? What are the pūrākau that goes with our whakapapa? And so these frameworks, this way of thinking, this way of being, is an opportunity to rethink the world and to make it a more inclusive place for everybody, including the generations to come. Kia ora.
That was Associate Professor Philip Wilcox speaking on Māori perspectives on gene technologies in New Zealand. Listening to him today, we see that how much of it extends into wider society and how it affects the communities that people live in, as well as things happening in science, which therefore can have repercussions on wider society as well. Stay in tuned, as we still have more things happening today, like our STEM segment and Sam Somerville's sports sweep. This has been Radio 1 with Philip Wilcox and Isla Tarring.
Welcome back to the R1 News at 1. It is time for Sports Sweep with Sam Somerville.
Sports Sweep with Sam Somerville, your weekly roundup of the biggest sports news on the R1 News at 1.
This is Radio 1 News. I'm Sam Somerville, hosting your Sports Sweep for the 10th of September. In rugby news, the All Blacks have lost back-to-back games against the Springboks in South Africa, being defeated 31-27 and 18-12 respectively. In the most recent game of the two taking place on Saturday, the All Blacks led at half-time by 6, only to be unravelled after losing a player to the sin bin. This is the Springboks' fourth successive win over the All Blacks, and these valuable points put them in an almost unassailable position in the Rugby Championship with two rounds to go. Here's what Will Jordan had to say on the most recent loss.
Yes, it felt like it got pretty scrappy. They did a good job of putting some balls up in the air and winning the kind of scraps off it. Probably struggled to find shape a little bit, and yeah, they won some more moments. We had our chances.
In football news, the English Premier League has kicked off to a fiery start, with Liverpool and Manchester City the only two teams yet to lose a game after three rounds. Manchester City's Erling Haaland scored back-to-back hat-tricks against Ipswich Town and West Ham, a feat which only six players have achieved, Haaland having achieved it twice within two seasons. Here's what he had to say following his hat-trick against West Ham.
Three goals today, back-to-back hat-tricks, seven goals in just three matches. How do you assess your start to the season?
It's been quite good, 9 points and seven goals, so cannot complain.
New Zealand's Chris Wood is off to a flying start this season for Nottingham Forest, scoring two goals in the opening three games, putting him sixth equal on the Premier League scoring table. New Zealand's football All Whites once again fell short against Mexico, losing 3-0 on Saturday. The All Whites recorded a measly two shots with zero on target during the entirety of the game. This is the All Whites' seventh loss in as many matches against a North American side since 2000, and it is a stark glimpse at how they may fare against the United States during tomorrow's game. Finally, the women's under-20 World Cup side have fallen short of the round of 16, getting knocked out of the group stage yesterday. During the tournament, we suffered losses of 7-0 against Japan and 3-1 against both Austria and Ghana. In motorsport news, Kiwi IndyCar driver Scott McLaughlin recorded his third win of the season last week, beating fellow Kiwi driver Scott Dixon by half a second. McLaughlin, who started sixth, passed Colton Herta on lap 218 to take the lead for good. The win boosted McLaughlin to third in the IndyCar standings, with Dixon hot on his heels in fifth place.
How were you able to deal with the unpredictability of this race?
That was like the most fun race I've had in IndyCar. It was a blast. So happy for everyone in the Gallagher Chevy. Like we just stuck with it, and it wasn't quite good at the start, the car, and then we just tuned her up, and it was awesome. So.
In sailing news, the Louis Vuitton Cup has begun in the build-up to the America's Cup, set to take place in just a few weeks. The Kiwis finished the round-robin section of the Cup first equal with Italy, recording seven wins and two losses. This impressive result was despite the boat being damaged after being dropped by a crane just a few days prior. Team New Zealand boss Grant Dalton confirmed that the damage was not as bad as initially feared, and the team were able to get racing as scheduled. New Zealand have automatically qualified for the America's Cup finals after winning the previous cup. In Paralympic news, the competition ended yesterday with New Zealand finishing 51st after collecting 9 medals. We ended with 4 bronze, 4 silver and 1 gold, with the gold coming from the women's 200-metre T47. China won with a whopping 220 medals, followed by Great Britain and the United States. I'm Sam Somerville, and that was your Sports Sweep for the 10th of September. Radio 1.
Sports Sweep with Sam Somerville, your weekly roundup of the biggest sports news on the R1 News at 1.
Welcome back to the R1 News at 1. I'm your news producer, Jemima.
And I'm Isla.
And thank you so much for tuning in to the R1 News today. Thank you, Sam, for that great sports sweep. We're going to round up the show for today. We are getting dangerously close to 2 o'clock and having to run out of the booth, so we will save that STEM news on Doritos, Rats and Lasers for next week. You'll have to tune in then to find out all about it. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's been a really great show. It's been so lovely to hear from Associate Professor Philip Wilcox. And if you missed it, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just look for the R1 News. Any final words, Isla?
No, none at all. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to R1 News at 1, here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The R1 News is uploaded daily wherever you get your podcasts, or head to r1.co.nz/news to get yourself all caught up. Additionally, you can follow R1 News NZ to keep up to date with all our newsworthy happenings.
New levels, new devils, homie. Yeah, they try pressing me. They think I got them pressies on me. Why they stressing me? Ain't even got no way.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.